open up the champagne. Pop. It's my house. Come on, turn it up.
Hear a knock on the door and the night begins. Cause we've done this before, so you come on in. Make yourself at my home. Tell me where you've been. Pour yourself something.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Now here are your hosts, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm.
Hello there! Welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily. Well, I'm so excited for that, as he always is.
It's getting shorter and shorter, so hopefully that means, like, in a matter of a month.
I don't think it's ever going to go away.
Maybe it's gone.
I don't think it's ever going away.
Okay. I say my prayers at night.
Well, pray for something more meaningful, please. All right.
Well, it's very relevant to me.
It is relevant to you. But as you said, I mean, it's less than, even if I really belt one out, it's not going to be more than 10 seconds of your day.
I want you to do one day like you do the
Let
Go
the
Browns.
Go Browns?
Yes. All right.
Hello. Okay. Hold
it's
the hello.
Be a big day. Maybe tomorrow. A lot of things are going to happen tomorrow.
Well, we won't. It doesn't. Nothing's going to happen until we're off the air, unfortunately.
True. But it's not. I mean, it's too late if you do it on Thursday.
Maybe for our first free agent signing, I'll do it like to welcome them here, like a hello there to our new.
You should
free
do it tomorrow, because tomorrow's the new year.
Okay.
Right.
All
exactly.
Right. Tomorrow.
Yeah.
All right.
New Year's.
And he can play that New Day crap the whole song. You can bump back every time, every break with the New Day stuff.
I'll be practicing at home tonight. All right. So we got
in
some,
the shower.
So we got some. Yes, in the shower. We've got Sir Andrew Gribble, Brown senior staff writer at 1:30. We've got Jason Locke and four CBS's NFL insider at 2:30. A lot of news to get into from around the league. We obviously want to hear from you. And by the way, how do you want the Browns to approach free agency? But I was watching last night Path to the Draft, and I do enjoy that show. I watch it pretty much every day. And when I was watching it, there was a discussion came up. Andrew Siciliano was kind of moderating, hosting, and they have Daniel Jeremiah and Charles Davis on. And the discussion that came up was, if you were the Browns, would you pay Brock Osweiler whatever it took to get him here and then be able to draft whoever you wanted at number two, or would you stay at number two and draft the quarterback of the future, whether it be Goff or Wentz, whatever you prefer.
And Osweiler's what, 25 years old?
Yes.
Okay.
Older. And in my opinion, well, what surprised me about it was both Charles Davis and Daniel Jeremiah said that they had Goff and Wentz as better quarterback prospects than Osweiler. But they went on to say that if they were the Browns, they would get Osweiler. And the only reason they gave, they didn't cite anything about him. The only reason that they gave for it is that we've seen him play in the NFL. I've seen Brandon Whedon play in the NFL. That doesn't mean I want Brandon Whedon back.
I've seen Johnny Manziel play in the NFL.
Doesn't mean I want him back. So I just thought it was for two guys that are usually, I think, tremendous at what they do, and I think you learn a lot watching that show. I was just a little taken aback with the flippant attitude, well, this guy's been in the NFL, and that makes him better than somebody who hasn't been in the NFL. And as you and I were talking about before the show, I have a couple problems with it. Number one, I watched Brock Osweiler play. I don't like his motion. I don't like the way he gets rid of the football. By the way, 2.65 seconds to throw for Brock Osweiler in the same offense that Peyton Manning was averaging, 2.3. We know how much importance Hugh Jackson places on processing speed and getting the ball out. I don't think that there is any that's one thing, okay? So that's number one for Brock Osweiler that I don't like. I don't see him as a fit. Second of all, we saw seven games. He threw seven touchdowns and five interceptions over his last five games. That doesn't blow me away. You look at him under pressure. Brock Osweiler was not great under pressure last year for the Denver Broncos. 52% completion, 65.8%, very much middle of the pack, not anything that gets me excited. Then you go to his deep passing. He was a terrible deep thrower last year. And on a team that's got Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders to be completing, he's only accurate. So they measure at Pro Football Focus how many of your deep passes are even catchable.
Right.
26% for a 6'7 strong-armed guy? No thank you. I just thought the fact that we saw him in the NFL being their point of analysis was weak. And then when you look at it and look at what would be a fit, et cetera, it's not even close. Andy Dalton, by the way, who doesn't have a strong arm, 47% accurate on his deep balls. So nothing about Brock Osweiler seems to fit with what the Browns would want to do under Hugh Jackson. And I don't think he's that good.
I don't either.
And if John Elway, who knows quarterbacks, who has a team in its Super Bowl window, clearly because they won last year, and I know it was Peyton Manning, but it was not Peyton Manning. It was the shell of Peyton Manning that they won a Super Bowl with. If he hasn't said, oh my, we got to lock this guy up, he doesn't feel like he's their franchise quarterback either.
So, I agree.
So if I'm the Browns, I'm not taking a guy that a team that wants to win another Super Bowl again next year doesn't even think can steward the ship on an elite defense.
Yeah, and I think the two analysts' perspective, and this is kind of what we talked about when you brought it up, you know, prior to coming on the show, is where they're coming from. A, they do in fact have a point that yes, he has actively played a game in the National Football League and won some football games. But for everyone that understood who the Denver Broncos were by the end of that season, and it really didn't matter who at quarterback was leading that group, whether it was Osweiler or Peyton Manning, the quarterback play did not win them the Super Bowl. It was the defense, it was the coaching, and their approach to the run towards the Super Bowl. And I feel the other points, as I made to you, are about a few things. Their feelings are that Brock Osweiler being around Peyton Manning for the last two or three years and the mentorship that Peyton probably gave him or the perception that Peyton gave it to him. And I really felt like Gary Kubiak gave a real in-depth look into how Peyton Manning was doing his own thing.
Yeah.
And getting himself right. You know, his meeting times were probably all different, was never really in the quarterback room, was either, you know, getting in the training room or out at practice in the bubble practicing, you know, with the threesome of guys that were helping him back to get back to play, and Osweiler's over there leading the first team offense and so on and so forth. So I just think that they're outside looking in saying he's played in the NFL and he was around one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. So therefore he translates very well to have a successful career.
Yeah. I don't get it. Those are guys who are so tape reliant.
Yep.
That it's almost like they spend so much time watching the college guys. They haven't actually watched the pros. Do you know what I mean? Like maybe they haven't watched Osweiler because there wasn't anything there that was impressive at all to me. And I just thought it was for two guys whose analysis I very, very, very much respect. I didn't get it. And there was another discussion last night that made me think too. They were talking about Peyton Manning, Ryan Leaf, and they were showing Peyton Manning clips from college and Ryan Leaf clips from college. When you look at that, and the discussion back then was, you know, as people now would say, oh no, it was so Peyton Manning all the way. It was really, a lot of people were 50-50 on it. Why Ryan Leaf had the intangibles, he had the talent. Now, the difference between Ryan Leaf and Carson Wentz is that he did it at a big-time college level in the Pac-10 then with Washington State. But it was Peyton Manning's maxed out. He's as efficient as he's going to be. He's just what he is. He doesn't have a big ceiling. He doesn't have the physical upside. So he doesn't have the traits. And it reminds me in some ways, not saying, and again, I'm not saying that Goff is Peyton Manning or will ever be anything as good as Peyton Manning, but it's a similar type of a debate now between a Carson Wentz and his traits and his upside and et cetera versus a guy who's more polished, a better passer, better cerebrally as a quarterback.
The bloodlines.
In Jared Goff. Yes.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, going back to those times and understanding who Ryan Leaf was and playing for the Chargers and the perception about who he was and what he did to not aid in any way, shape, and form what that they regressed as a franchise because of everything that Ryan Leaf brought with him.
Yeah.
It was his inability to actually play the quarterback position at a high level and the off-the-field antics that everyone knows very well. And I know Carson Wentz is not that off-the-field guy, but to me personally, I don't feel when you have the number two pick and it is essentially the swing at the plate that we've always wanted. And now we may not have the best draft prospects at the quarterback position that the year prior with Winston and Mariota or the year next year with Watson potentially being the number one overall pick. But we have to get the pick of the litter at number two because the fastest and best way for us, along with Hugh Jackson, who to me is a quarterback guru and has figured it out for Flacco and figured it out for Dalton, we need to get the right guy here with him, regardless of who it is. And I don't necessarily need a project. I want a guy that's going to come in. And even, you know, former defensive coordinator Jim O'Neill, when we sat at 12 and, what, 22 last year?
12 and 19.
It's we need to draft two, if not three, starters with that second-round pick as well. That's what we need to get. Cleveland fans cannot wait another year for the guy that we pick to maybe turn out to be the guy we hope he's going to be in 2017. You got to give him the football because there are too many examples of those quarterbacks getting the football and flourishing by fire because they were thrown into it very early.
Could not agree with you anymore on that. And when you look at it, you know, you've got Hugh Jackson. You've got a guy that is a quarterback molder, right? But he doesn't want a project. If you look at his system, I think it's obvious that the signs point to Goff. It befuddles me. Mel Kiper has Goff as his number one quarterback and again gives Carson Wentz to the Browns with the first quarterback taken in the draft. And it's interesting to me why that keeps happening and why there is this link. And maybe it's some real link. Maybe people know something that we don't know. But for me, when I come back to it, it does seem strange that, you know, somebody would say just, oh, yeah, Brock Osweiler. If the Denver Broncos thought Brock Osweiler was a guy, a top half of the league quarterback, he'd be locked up there. And he may well get locked up there, but they wouldn't even give him the opportunity to get to the market. They clearly have a cap in what they feel his value is, which is not commensurate with a guy that the Browns should be trying to build their franchise on.
Yes.
So I don't like that. Draft the guy that you think can be it. And if you don't think one of them can, then that's a bigger problem. But in my opinion, you need to get the guy that you think is the steadiest. And I'll look at it this way. Let's imagine like a bell curve. So I'll say Jared Goff has, we'll call it 20%. It might not be that high, but let's just for the sake of discussion and the point I'm trying to make. Jared Goff has a 20% chance of being a top 8 quarterback in the NFL. Okay. I think he's got a 60% chance of being a top 16 quarterback in the NFL. So that's somebody that I can win. So now I have 80% with him of somebody that I can win with for sure. And a 20% chance of busting out. Okay?
Yep.
Carson Wentz might have, let's call it, a 33% chance, or maybe we'll call it, 33% chance of being a top 8 quarterback in the NFL because of his unbelievable gifts. He might only have then, we'll call it, a 25% chance in the middle somewhere of being an average quarterback, and the rest would be his bust potential.
That 40%+.
Yeah. So let's say he's got the higher chance of being the super elite guy.
Only by 13%.
In this, for the sake of this.
Correct.
But yeah, whatever you end up deciding it is. He's got a smaller chance of being an 8-16 quarterback, and he's got a much higher
chance of being busting.
Yeah. And I think that's how you have to look at it. And I think if you're the Browns, for him, I would say it's a 40% chance of busting. When you look at the Browns, you need to have somebody that is a little bit more stable. I don't think you can swing and miss here. So if you're giving up, it's like for example, you in a contract negotiation. Somebody would offer you, let's say, $1 million base, but you could get up to $1.5 million in incentives. Or would you rather have a guaranteed $1.25 million?
You would take the guarantee.
Some people would. Some people, it's two ways of looking at it. Right.
Exactly.
But if you're the Browns, I want what I consider to be the safer of the picks.
Correct. And that's the whole point is, with the number 2 overall pick, there is no guarantee in the next 3 years, with 3 to 5 years with Hugh Jackson as your head football coach, that you will draft in the top 5 again. You hope that's not the case.
Yes.
Okay? So that means odds are very, very strong that you have no chance in the next 3 to 5 years, at least you hope, with the progress this franchise is going to make with Hugh Jackson and Sashi Brown at the helm, that you have no shot at the number one quarterback in the next 3 to 5 years, and this year you do.
You do. Yes, and there are people who say, I can, like, for example, the career coach is tweeting us, I can wait for Watson over any of these quarterbacks. No, we'll pick top 3 next year. I don't want any, but Goff is it. So I guess he does want Goff if he has to take one of them. You can't count on anything for next year's draft. You can't count on anything.
Watson's going to be top 3 next year, barring an injury.
And if, for example, if this year we were number 2, if next year we were number 2 again, but a quarterback needy team at number 1, you're not getting him.
Right.
No
or
matter
someone
what.
Else has the resources to move up to number 1 right in front of the Cleveland Browns.
Right. It is very interesting to me, though, just again, as we talk through all of this, and I'm curious to get everybody's takes, and Gibbs, I want to get yours as well, but the Brock Osweiler thing, I have zero interest in that. I'll just come out and say it. I, Nathan Zagura, zero interest in Brock Osweiler being the quarterback.
And
he
pushed a female.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the next Scott Mitchell.
Over a pizza.
Scott Mitchell.
Scott Mitchell?
I give you the next Scott Mitchell.
Scott Mitchell at least had...
Someone's going to pay that guy like $45 million for him to suck.
I just think that if John Elway and the Denver Broncos and Peyton Manning, by the way, who I'm sure is giving his input on what he thinks about Brock Osweiler at this point, because I think clearly he loved the franchise. If they thought he was that guy, and this is where you're combating. So guy Travis Wilson, who is against anybody, I want Osweiler. Big, strong arm, 3 years learning from Peyton, played well last year. First of all, one, he didn't play well last year. Two, he's got a strong arm, but was the second least accurate deep ball thrower in the NFL on a team that had Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders. Okay, even Peyton Manning, who couldn't throw the ball out of his own shadow last year, was more accurate on his down-the-field throws than Brock Osweiler. Big, strong arm, learning from Peyton. I don't think he learned much from Peyton, because if you watch his play, none of it mirrors what Peyton Manning did from a timing standpoint or a cerebral standpoint. And I'll go back to it. If the Broncos thought he was the guy, we're not even talking about Brock Osweiler being a possibility to come to the Browns or the Texans or anywhere else. No thank you is what I have to say about that. No thank you. If you're calling him Scott Mitchell. By the way, I don't think he has a chance of matching Scott Mitchell's numbers. Scott Mitchell
was... What about Matt Flynn?
Matt Flynn. Matt Flynn's not bad. Matt Flynn got a huge contract. Matt Flynn still gets big. Who knows why?
He might still be getting paid from that big contract.
He is. He went to Seattle and was supposed to be their starter on a big money deal and got beat out by Russell Wilson. Again, this is what I'm saying. No thank you, Brock Osweiler. He's played in the NFL. So what? Think about all the people that have played in the NFL that have played for the Browns the last 23 or whatever, however many quarterbacks it is. Oh, they played in the NFL.
How many of them left here in their mid-20s and did anything after they left Cleveland?
How many quarterbacks at this age on a second contract leave and go on to be successful elsewhere?
Not many. And the key phrase in your sentence is leave.
Leave. Are allowed to leave.
Are allowed to leave or willingly leave and then go flourish somewhere else.
I'm trying to think about it. I mean, Matt Schaub went from Atlanta, but in a similar situation, went to Houston and had some very, very good years.
Yeah.
Trying to think if there's anybody else. Anyway, if people can call and start the Brock Osweiler hype, hopefully he'll just sign somewhere and we won't deal with it. And again, I'm not saying Carson Wentz is Ryan Leaf. Clearly off the field, nothing like him. And I'm not saying that Goff is Peyton Manning, but I just think it's an interesting thing that people, you know, physical traits are so great. How great were Jamarcus Russell's physical traits? So great he was the number one overall pick. That doesn't translate. Physical traits are not enough to play quarterback in the National Football League. What is between your ears, the chess match, as my man says, Matt Wilhelm, the chess match is as important as anything. All right. When we come back, we'll open up the phone lines, 216-578-0850, CBD, here on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Some updates from around the league. Malik Jackson, the number 3 overall free agent according to Pro Football Focus and the number 1 according to NFL.com, will be going to the Jaguars according to all reports. Kelechi Osemele, the guard from Baltimore out of our division, heading on a big deal that will make him the richest guard in NFL history, although he's probably going to be playing left tackle to the Oakland Raiders on a huge deal. We know DeMarco Murray being traded to the Tennessee Titans. Kiko Alonso, Byron Maxwell traded from Philadelphia to the Miami Dolphins. Jordan Cameron restructuring his contract down there, betting on himself that he can have a big year here. As far as the Browns and the rumors go, what we're hearing, they've been linked to center Stefan Wisniewski, who was the first player that Hugh Jackson drafted in 2011 with the Oakland Raiders. Here's just some interesting stuff on Wisniewski compared to our own, or formerly our own, whatever he may be, Alex Mack. Last year, Alex Mack, 705 pass-blocking snaps, most in the NFL. Wisniewski with Jacksonville, 686. Mack, 4 sacks allowed. Wisniewski, 2. Hits allowed by Mack, 4. Wisniewski, 0. hurries allowed by Mac, 28. Wisniewski, 11. Total pressures allowed, 36 for Mac. Wisniewski, 13. He was considered one of the best pass-blocking centers in the National Football League last year. And so he's a guy that, you know, certainly has some potential there. He was the number 12 overall center, according to Pro Football Focus last season. Alex Mack was number 16, grading out very positively as a pass blocker. In fact, as a pass blocker, he graded out as the fifth best center in the league. Now, on run blocking, he was not as good there. Did not get a great grade on the run blocking side and trailed Alex Mack in that category significantly. But as a pass blocker, he was amongst the league's elite there in a very pass-happy offense for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Interesting, he's 26, former second-round pick. The entry started every game he's ever been in the NFL, 77 starts. What's interesting about him to me is why, what does this mean? If this is true that the Browns are interested in him, what does that mean for Cam Irving? Does that mean the Browns feel Cam Irving can be a right tackle?
Probably.
Does it mean they don't think he can be a center? And if they don't think he can be a center, it makes you wonder, why in the world did the Browns just not draft a tackle at number 19 as opposed to a center?
Right. And maybe they like, you know, Cam Irving for his versatility, but you obviously want him to grow into a spot and flourish in one spot along that offensive line. And I guess an interesting question to me is, what type of money was Wisniewski getting paid, and what type of contract would he garner so that you can kind of leverage the, you know, $45 to $50 million that Alex Mack would probably get on a new contract on a new five-year deal versus the type of money the Cleveland Browns would shell out for Wisniewski if, in fact, he is going to be the center here and there is truly interest from the Cleveland Browns.
And guys, we're talking about big money being shelled out for guys that maybe don't deserve big money.
I don't think he's a big money. This isn't a big money player. This would be
correct.
This would fit the Browns
$3 to $5 million
doing something
a year.
Just on
smart.
On a sidebar, Adam Schefter just tweeting out about that Malik Jackson deal with Jacksonville.
Yeah.
$90 million.
Deal expected to come in at about $15 million a season.
On a 6-year deal.
For a guy that was okay last year, made a position change in, you know, was good in 14, made a position change, didn't really play that well. This is going to be some insane money being dropped here over the next 48 hours.
Yeah.
And again, you know, for those people that say, well, you know, the Browns aren't spending a lot, do you want to spend $15 million a year on Malik Jackson?
No, thank you.
No, thank you.
Exactly. It doesn't make any sense. It's mind-blowing when that number just came in. That's what I like Wisniewski. I think if you can get a guy like that, if you end up losing Alex Mack, I think that's fantastic.
Well, the one thing that you don't have when you go out and get a guy Wisniewski in you know, in the minds of analysts, this is a guy that's played the game and played it at a high level, and you just, you know, kind of rattled off some of his stats. The drop-off associated with him is not going to be as significant if you go from Alex Mack to Cam Irving, to a guy that struggled as a rookie in spot duty throughout the season and played multiple positions throughout training camp and a multiple-time Pro Bowler and, you know, one of the highest-paid centers in the league.
It just makes me wonder what that means in the evaluation of Cam Irving. Does that mean that Cam Irving is just an absolute washout, or is he going to play right tackle if the Browns sign Wisniewski? That's what the questions that
Maybe
it opens
it's
to me.
It's
the first person, that the Browns are linked to is a guy who started in center for his whole career.
But like when he played with Jacksonville last year, didn't he only sign a 1-year deal?
What?
Didn't Wisniewski only have a 1-year deal last year? Isn't he coming off of just a 1-year deal?
He might be. He's only 26.
I think he only had a 1-year deal.
Because I think they did that because they were trying to give themselves the freedom to go after Mack when he was going to come up.
And it's funny because you don't hear their team as much associated with Alex Mack as you do right now with, say, the Atlanta Falcons.
The Falcons are the team right now that seems to be all in on Mack, yes.
But I just
and I've heard five. The rumor was what, 5 years, $50 million?
Yes,
that's worth this crazy
for a 31-year-old.
Crazy. Anyway, we'll see. I think that it's just very much an interesting thing that if the Browns, for the first one that they're linked to, that it is a center, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Let's go to the phones, 216-578-0850. Kurt in Twinsburg. Kurt, welcome.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Doing good. So I was saying that we shouldn't sign Mac. I think it's too much. And like you said, Wisniewski is he's 26. He turns 27 in a couple weeks. But I was thinking either him or Ben Jones at center. And then as far as other free agent acquisitions, Mohamed Sanu and Marvin Jones, either one of those two at wide receiver. And I know you probably caused some controversy, but I don't want us to draft a quarterback off the bat. I say get Joey Bosa.
All right. No controversy. I just would disagree. Browns need a quarterback. Every team in the NFL needs a quarterback. All right. When we come back, Sir Andrew Gribble will be with us in studio to talk about the latest in free agency, his thoughts on all of these situations, and much, much more right after this on CBD.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm. On the day that Calvin Johnson retires, you lose Peyton Manning, Calvin Johnson, back-to-back days officially in the National Football League, which is pretty wild when you think about it. But before we bring in Sir Andrew, actually we'll bring him in right now and then we'll get to our phone call. Sir Andrew Gribble. Senior staff writer, ClevelandBrowns.com and the Browns mobile app. How you doing, man?
What's going on, guys?
Not too much. Not too much.
Looking forward to the 2021 Hall of Fame enshrinement. Peyton Manning, Calvin Johnson, Charles Woodson.
Yeah, it's a good class.
To name three.
Good class.
Do you think we'll be talking about does Marshawn deserve to be in that class? Because I don't think he'll get in first ballot or if he even has a chance at all.
If T.O. can't get in, Marshawn will not be first ballot.
No.
What about Jared Allen?
What?
What about Jared Allen?
No, I don't think so. I don't.
How long
think,
did it take?
I don't think he's a first ballot. Jared Allen in the
Kevin Green arena. How long did it take Kevin Green to get in? 3 to 5 years, maybe more.
It took some time because he thought he wasn't getting in.
Right. I put Jared Allen in that same arena, like very high in sacks, but there's going to be talent after talent after talent that I feel is going to step away or more deserving prior to him, but eventually maybe yes.
And I read something online today. I'm not sure if it was correct or not, but Jerry Rice is the last wide receiver to get in as a first ballot guy.
What?
Jerry Rice was the last first ballot wide receiver to get into the Hall of Fame. So are we guaranteeing that Calvin Johnson is going to be a first ballot guy?
I think he should be for what he's done. I mean, I think he should be.
I think he should be too, but I think it'll be.
I don't know if he
will. I don't think it's a slam dunk as people think it is because I think they're going to look at the 9-year career and that'll get some uneasiness among the Hall of Fame voters.
I think that's fair. So we're talking earlier, I was watching Path of the Draft last night, and they were saying that the Browns should sign Brock Osweiler as opposed to drafting one of these quarterbacks. What's your opinion of Brock Osweiler?
I think I'm going to echo a lot of things you've been saying throughout the show. I think, and this is something Sashi said last week too, I mean, if the Broncos are going to let that guy walk away from their organization, you got to wonder what you're getting
right
at that point, because it's just, you know, teams don't let quarterbacks go like that. I mean, look at what the Redskins did with Kirk Cousins. I mean, I think Kirk Cousins had a better year this year than Brock Osweiler, but I wouldn't say Kirk Cousins was like a top 10 quarterback, but they're willing to put all that money investing in their quarterback because
right,
not having a quarterback is worse than maybe having a known quarterback that is
not
an elite
good
quarterback. Yeah, so I mean, I just don't see it. I mean, I think he did well filling in for Peyton Manning. I thought the offense with him was better than it was with Peyton Manning this past year with Denver. I thought he won a big game against New England,
yep,
performed very well. But he didn't – I didn't think he just jumped off the page. I think that Broncos offense still had some issues with him in there.
Right.
And I would not confidently pick the Broncos going forward next year with Brock Osweiler as a quarterback to repeat, if not even win the division. I think they're going to have to figure out some things.
And don't you think that John Elway's, you know, inability to trust Brock Osweiler, not offer him the money to make him your franchise quarterback, but also by losing Osweiler, they're risking, you know, again, as Nathan calls their Super Bowl window, to have nothing and having to start over to sign a secondhand free agent or drafting a quarterback at some point, you know, to fill in to keep them relevant and winning football games, so much so that, again, they're not giving Osweiler a proven product that has, quote unquote, played in the NFL the opportunity to maintain his standing there in Denver.
Yeah, they're not in an ideal spot to get a new quarterback this year. I don't even know if they have the assets to trade up in the first round if they wanted to do that. I think their backup would be the guy from Northwestern, Trevor Siemian, I think is the other quarterback on the roster there right now. So they would have to make some moves, and we've seen the market. It looks like Fitzpatrick's going to stay with the Jets, and then Chase Daniel is out there, and that's about it.
Maybe they want to kick the tires on RG3.
I mean, but when you're bringing back a team with this many veterans,
you don't do that.
You need to have a sure thing at quarterback.
Now, the Broncos have released Luis Vasquez today and Owen Daniels, freeing up about $10 million in cap space. So that could be a sign that they are getting close to something with Brock, et cetera. So we will see there. We will see with that. Let's get a couple calls in here while we got you. Speaking of Brock Osweiler, Bill in Southern Cali wants to talk about him.
Big Nate, what's going on, brother? How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing good. Hey, my fantasy football team did really well. Thanks for all your help.
Awesome. Good. Love to hear it.
Here's my quick question to you guys. Is it going to make sense to pay the big money for Brock and then use that draft pick on maybe a defensive lineman or possibly somebody to fill an offensive line need? Or is it better, are we in a rebuilding stage to where it makes more sense, if we don't get Josh Gordon back, to just start the rebuilding process with Hugh, let Hugh work with a great potential quarterback like Wentz or Goff? I've seen Goff in person. He has all the tools to be a professional football player. So my question is, at this point, are they in the rebuilding mode, or are they just one or two pieces away from being a playoff contender? And that would be my basis. Yes, sir.
I think the Browns are in a rebuilding mode.
Right.
I would start fresh, wouldn't you, then?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that that's why you do it. I think that's why you don't, you know, you go ahead and get that quarterback through the draft.
Yeah, I think, and I agree with his point, though. I think if you feel like you're a quarterback and another piece away from being a playoff team, maybe Brock Osweiler interests you a little bit more because you wouldn't have to worry about breaking him in. Maybe he would be able to step in and be a decent quarterback. But I just don't think it would be the right circumstance.
I agree, and the guy's the worst deep ball thrower in the league. He takes forever to get the ball out. He didn't impress me just watching him, and at the end of the day, they decided they were better off with the shell of Peyton Manning than Brock Osweiler. So that says something to me. I mean, at the end of the day—
If not equal. I think they might have thought they might have been equal.
And like they'll go with the guy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Go with the last controversy.
Yes.
Going to the Super Bowl.
Yes, indeed. All right, we got one more call, and then we'll get to you right here. One more call, 216-578-0850, Dave in Port Clinton. Dave.
Hey guys, Brock Osweiler. Oof. Oh, I would not want that guy.
So, I agree. I agree.
I know. Well, one thing I don't think you'll agree on. Well, you might, but I like Wentz. And
okay.
I just tweeted to Nathan and said like the Jamarcus Russell. I just don't get that. I don't see everybody. I'm not just saying you guys, but a lot of people compare him to Jamarcus Russell or Ryan Leaf because they have the traits. But the problem with those guys that busted, they put no work in their off time. And that's the biggest thing. He has the traits and they're saying he's going to put the work in and that he is a guy that studies and has all those great traits.
Yes.
I mean, I want to compare him to the guys like Big Ben, the guys that put the time in and the guys that wanted to be great. And I can't pass on Big Ben again, like we did in 2004.
So again, it comes down to what you want, right? What do you want out of a quarterback? And, you know, we talked about it earlier, and I don't know if you agree with this. I think Goff maybe doesn't have as good a chance to be, like, crazy elite like Wentz does, but I think he has a much better chance of not being a bust or being that guy that you can start and win a Super Bowl with.
I don't know.
Would you say Flacco's crazy elite?
No, but he's paid. He had one Super Bowl run where he was elite. I mean, his run in that year was legendary. Now, if the Broncos could play proper man cover three, and when they had a safety just playing prevent defense and knock the ball down, Joe Flacco never has won a Super Bowl.
Right.
But he did. And so you can't take that away from him.
But I'm just saying, he was great.
I mean, wouldn't we have thought like guys like Ponder and Gabbert would have at least, we could have said, I don't know if he's going to be great, but I think he's going to be decent. I mean, couldn't you have said the same thing about those guys? That's why.
No, because Gabbert came. Tough. I didn't like Gabbert. Gabbert was at Missouri, and that's, and I didn't like his physical traits. I've never was a Gabbert fan. And Ponder, watching his Florida State tape, Ponder wasn't that impressive. Ponder was kind of like E.J. Manuel. E.J. Manuel wasn't that impressive, and they took him because maybe because he went to Florida State. I don't know why people were so enamored with him.
But I guess I'm trying to go through the logic. I think people are less worried about the bust factor with Goff because he went to a Power 5 school.
And that's not why it is for me. For me, it's because he can win from the pocket.
Yeah. I just think with both, I don't know enough to definitively say either way that this guy is either going to be great or be a bust. I just don't. That's where the science of evaluating quarterbacks, that's why these guys get so much money to evaluate this. And even when they do, like you said at the end of the day, Leaf, people were so convinced this guy was going to be great, and he turned into one of the worst picks in history at that spot. So it's so difficult to disseminate, and that's why, again, I think every opportunity the Browns are getting to look at these quarterbacks, they're going to talk with them, talk with every people around them, and really dissect it, because I think it goes beyond what you're seeing on the tape, and it's what you do in the classroom with these guys.
I think that matters. I think how you win matters. I think what you can fall back on. Is it your ability to be accurate under pressure? Is it your ability to make progressions, win from the pocket? Those are the things that I look for in a quarterback. That's why I like Goff. Wentz, you just don't get the opportunity to see it, and it's not his fault that he played at a school where he didn't have to. I mean, I just tell people again, it's, to me, something that North Dakota State went 8-0 when he got hurt. Their offense scored almost 5 points a game more while he was out. Their backup quarterback's rating, completion percentage, yards per attempt was basically identical. So it's tough to evaluate him from that. I still think he has obviously gifts. I was impressed when I saw him up close in person. But I think that it's more of a leap no matter what with him than it is with Goff.
Now, do you feel if Hugh Jackson and Andrew Berry and Sashi Brown have their mindset on one over the other, do you feel that the repertoire of weapons that you give Goff is different than you would give Wentz? Because their games are just a little bit different.
I don't know that it necessarily would be that different. I just think give them weapons. I mean, when we keep talking about it all the time. Derek Carr, they give him Amari Cooper. They bring in Michael Crabtree. They draft Clive Walford. They've got Latavius Murray. He's got a complete group of weapons around him.
Down now they're spending to protect him.
Now they're spending to protect him. In Jacksonville, they got Allen Robinson, Allen Hurns, Marquise Lee. They signed Julius Thomas. They drafted T.J. Yeldon in the second round, I believe. Right. They gave him a complete group of weapons. The only quarterback from that group that doesn't have a complete group of weapons is probably Theodore, but he's got Adrian Peterson. And
he doesn't have to have.
He doesn't have to have. Now, I think they're going to try to get him. They drafted Stephon Diggs.
Mike Wallace
was a bust, which was no shock to anybody, I think, who was paying attention. They did re-sign Kyle Rudolph, but I think they're going to get him a wide receiver. It looks like they're going to be big in the market for an offensive lineman. They just load hold took a reduction, and they're looking to sign somebody on the offensive line to help out there. So I think that you've got to surround these guys with something. It's not like the Browns have Adrian Peterson in the backfield. Now, hopefully you get Josh Gordon back, but I think you bring in another receiver. You've got Gary. I would love to see Ladarius Green come here at tight end. I think that would make sense with what we're trying to do. But give him weapons. Give him the opportunity to have playmakers out there. And I think, whatever happened with Johnny and every other quarterback that's been here, I just don't think they've ever had the situation where they've had the weapons. The one year you did was the Norv Turner year, and our defense blew a lot of games late. That was Ray Horton's last year here, and they didn't finish. Who knows what story we would be telling right now about this.
You also had a backup quarterback most of that year.
Yeah. Well, you went through three. You had Whedon, then Hoyer, then Campbell, then back to Whedon.
Never getting everything on the same page here. That's the goal. No. Get all on the same page.
And I think that some of that stability comes from having that guy that can be, you know, your guy that you are building everything around the program. They had with Andy Dalton down in Cincinnati again. Do I love Andy Dalton? No. Am I more of a believer in Andy Dalton this year than I was going into last year? Yes, because I saw how efficient and effective he played and how they were 9-0. If he doesn't get hurt, they probably win a couple playoff games and they maybe go to the Super Bowl. But he did get hurt. But at least they feel like they've got something in place there.
But I think even more, to continue that conversation, you look at the intangibles of what was around Andy Dalton.
Right.
Hugh Jackson, you know, multiple-year coordinator there with him, grooming him, learning from his mistakes, bringing him along, to create the perfect storm, acquiring all the talent so that all the talent was hitting in the same year. A.J. Green had, you know, was A.J. Green. Sanu, you know, was Sanu. Marvin Jones had his best year. Then you've got the combination of the two backs in the backfield that gives you great diversity, you know, with the power run game and the flash out of the backfield, i.e. Duke Johnson. And then Tyler Eifert finally gets healthy and has his best year. So a lot of things working in one favor made Andy Dalton look like and play like a top five, top eight quarterback. But it was putting the right pieces, which didn't happen overnight, around a guy that you and by many people's accord is a middle of the road average quarterback with talent, with proper coaching, and the time to trust the process. And boom, they have a year like they have.
Yeah, and I think he got to the point where he was accurate enough and smart enough in terms of how he ran that offense to get the most out of those guys, and those guys got the most out of him, and Hugh Jackson got the most out of everybody. So it was, as you said, in some ways a perfect storm, but he made progress every single year,
absolutely,
and you could see that.
Yes.
And part of that was coaching. Part of that's also having a quarterback who starts for you five straight seasons and seeing what you can do.
I think there's two key factors with building a great team, and I think the quarterback one affects everywhere on the ball, because once you get the quarterback in place, you can devote all your assets, free agency, draft, otherwise, to every other position on the field. You don't have to keep worrying about that with lofty draft picks and things like that. And then on defense, having that stability of the same kind of system for multiple years on top of each other, so you're not losing these guys that are maybe fits in 4-3, and then you go to 3-4, and they don't necessarily fit in, and vice versa. I think those are the two things you strive to hope happen, and that potentially, if you're looking at the defensive side of the ball at the Browns, why maybe keeping a 3-4 in place will help them moving forward as well, because you've got guys that fit in those pieces.
What do you think of, we were talking about Wisniewski coming, what do you think about that? What do you make of that?
I mean, I think it's a solid backup plan if you're going to lose Mac. I think there's some unknown right now with Cam Irving in that offensive line position. We really didn't get to see him at all at center this past year. I know what he was able to do at center in college is probably why he got drafted as high as he did in the NFL. That's where he really started catching people's attention. So I think there is some upside with Cam Irving at center, but you wonder if he'll be ready to go at that spot for this season, if that's the plan in place. So that's why I think Wisniewski would be a good stopgap at that position, and you could potentially either start working with Irving at center or start grooming him for another position you might need him on the offensive line. I think Wisniewski's probably a middle-tier center in the league. I don't know how the ratings have him, and I think that's solid. You're not going to get another Alex Mack on the free agency market, but he's younger and you can bring him in, and you might,
as of last year, he was a better pass
you might not have as much of a drop off with Wisniewski right away as you would with a player like Irving learning the position and still getting in better physical shape for the NFL.
So does it make you think that where's Cam Irving going to play? And if he is going to play right tackle, shouldn't you have just drafted a tackle?
Yeah, but you might not have known the chain of events that has gone on.
If you drafted him to play center at 19th overall and you're looking at signing a middle-of-the-road free agent center, you can't feel good about the draft pick.
Do you think, though, the goal of last year's regime was to maybe have him provide enough and win that right guard spot, though, on the offensive line last year?
He didn't do that.
Oh, I know. That's what didn't happen, though. I mean,
why wouldn't you just draft a guard?
I don't know. It's just
these guys are out of a job for a reason. You know this, right?
Also true. Also true. I mean, but at the same time, this was not a pick that was met with question by any draft pundit or anyone.
I agree.
At the time, it's a good pick.
And the same way that we talked yesterday about the restricted free agents getting tendered and Jamie Meter and Tank Carter being signed, I made the point to say that, you know, Ray Horton and Pep Hamilton and these, you know, the defensive and offensive coaches have evaluated this roster in depth enough to offer those contracts out and those tenders. And maybe it really is, to kind of coincide with your point, Nathan, is that they've watched some of the film, and some of what you see out of Cam Irving is immaturity, or it's not as valuable to what you immediately want to put on the field so that you have to make a move to replace Alex Mack if he leaves, to have certainty at the center position.
Yeah, I just don't know if there's enough known information to know that you can just plug him in right away at center. I think that's especially for this coaching staff that's coming in, you know, with 2 months
teams,
looking at film.
There are plenty of teams that draft centers in the fourth round and start them right away.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know,
but I mean, think, but I'm just saying. But you look at, the struggles that Cam Irving had from the physical side. That's something you don't, you haven't seen him. You don't know how he's going to come to camp looking, and you can't just plug him in just because you drafted him to do it. You can't put him in and expose your offensive line and expose your new quarterback if he's not physically ready to play. I think you have to have backup plans in place, and you would be doing a disservice to your team if you're not looking at a guy like Wisniewski who's out in the market who could be brought in for maybe an affordable price.
Right, and essentially, to coincide with that point, if you sign a Wisniewski somewhere between $3 and $5 million a year, you got Cam Irving on the hook for a little over $2 million with the bonus, and you're putting roughly $5 to $7 million worth of assets into two players. One that's very versatile in Cam Irving, hopefully, and a young budding player that you drafted 18th overall, instead of giving Alex Mack, a 30 going on 31-year-old center who's been there and done that, $10 million a year.
Yeah.
So you're getting two players,
sure,
you know, for $7 million roughly, instead of giving one guy 10.
Probably getting three players ultimately when it's all said and done.
True.
Maybe
yes.
Even more.
Correct.
Than that.
But I meant two that one of them's going to play center and one of them's not. And what you have in Cam Irving is a guy that you've drafted that's not going anywhere anytime soon and in hopes to develop with this slew of strength coaches that we now have here in Cleveland
and
to work with this guy to get physical and understand what it takes to play either an internal or that right tackle position in the NFL successfully.
It just makes me concerned. Okay.
Of course.
That's the first thing that the Browns are linked to.
Well, they're linked to Marvin Jones too. There you go.
Okay.
Okay. So yes. Second.
But yeah. I'm just wondering what would be you're saying the Browns should bank on Cam Irving going into center or what, like that's
you would want them to. You drafted him 19th overall in the National Football League. How many centers are drafted in the first round? Not many.
About
so when you draft him in the first round,
yeah.
He's supposed to be your center for the next 10 years. Like Alex Mack or like a Jeff Fain or one of the Pouncies. That's what they're supposed to be. You're not supposed to have any doubts of going into his second year that he can't play center.
But after what you've seen last year with the struggles that he had, I think you've got to at least have a backup plan.
No, clearly. But it just would go ahead and it would be one of those things that, A, would once again be, you know, concerning, right? You've got, from the draft a couple years ago, Justin Gilbert looks like a total bust unless something happens with him. Johnny's going to be... It's a matter of when, not if, he's gone from this team. So that's done. And now it could be Cam Irving. Could be, if you don't even feel comfortable giving him an opportunity to play center, you know, because you're not signing Wisniewski. If you sign Wisniewski, you're not signing him to not play center.
Right.
It's not a tryout. It's not a competition. He's going to be your center. So that means Cam's moving somewhere else. That is something that I think that, to me, would be troubling. That troubles me.
We'll see. We'll see how Cam looks April 4th back here.
We certainly will. But listen, maybe he's training and maybe they knew. Maybe maybe he's working on being a right tackle. Maybe that's was the plan all along, that he would play right tackle. It is interesting that he took many more reps at tackle last year in practice than at center.
Yeah, it took a whole bunch of left tackle.
Yeah.
I would say about half his practice time.
Yeah. So maybe they were working him at tackle. Again, your point is valid. Do I feel like you could bank on him after what I saw last year? No, but I also didn't see him play in the NFL at the position he was drafted to play.
Right.
So I wanted to think that maybe that would.
That's why I think we're going to make it clear. You got to give this guy the benefit of the doubt going into year two after how he was moved around all over the place last year.
And also
lock him in at one spot, get him in better shape. We obviously know he's a great mental player. I think that everyone said how smart he is. He picks it up. That's what makes him a valuable center. But I just you don't. It's just a little bit of unknown, and that's why I think there needs to be back.
And also taking those Wednesday reps for Joe Thomas as well.
Yeah, left tackle. Yeah,
everywhere.
All right, it'll be interesting to see tomorrow at 4. It all opens up, and we'll have an opportunity to see what the Browns actually do. Again, I'm not expecting much at all in the early run, not even a little bit. So certainly, let us know, what you're looking for the Browns from free agency, but. Don't expect the big names and the big contracts. I just don't see it happening for the Cleveland Browns. All right, that'll do it for hour number one. When we come back, Jason Lockenfour with the latest on free agency around the National Football League in hour number two. Play a little higher, lower, and we'll take your phone calls, 216-578-0850 on CBD.